but to do, I'm happy to do as I'm here, is I was anticipating tomorrow, which can still happen tomorrow, I'm expecting it to. If anybody wants to meet with me and talk about their practice or talk about the Dharma in their life and have some individual conversation, then I'm here and I don't need to leave, I don't need to go back till the evening ferry. And so there's a space here, there's a room in the back that's going to have the heat on and be available. I've done that before a few times, met people. So sort of 20 minutes or so of conversation. If anyone's interested in staying on and having such a conversation, then it's totally possible. It would be nice for me to write that down so I know how to schedule people, if people want to do that. Gretchen?
Yeah, in the next break, I'll come to you about the gas people with clients on.
Oh, okay. You could do that starting from, I need a cup of tea, so like 4:15 tomorrow. Sort of start, that's what I'm suggesting. But as this has come into the conversation, I'm available too at the end of this day. So the same thing, 4 o'clock, I'll have a cup of tea. English, you know. From age 11, they're training to have a cup of tea at 4 o'clock. You have to have a cup of tea at 4 o'clock. You're desperate to have a cup of tea. Don't eat anything else until supper later.
Well boiled.
So yeah, like that's 55 years of 4 o'clock. So the body's totally tuned into it. So 4:15 today and 4:15 tomorrow. If there's somebody who would like to stay, or a couple, three of you, that would be fine. And so just let me know, or again, Gretchen will put that available. It's an opportunity to have, you know, one-on-ones is kind of not so common, I guess. So afternoon. What I'm wanting us to continue with is this, the beginning principle of vitaka vichara. Vitaka, connecting, vichara, sustaining the attention. And it's the skills around concentrating the mind, training the mind to be present and stay here. There's lots of other aspects and technical ways of this, which I'll go to tomorrow. Tomorrow I'm going to go further into what happens when we do that, when we stay, what we actually see, and expanding on the characteristics that are revealed, what happens when we see things coming and going and changing, and the impersonal nature of all of that. And so it's more the realization levels, but this is more the practicing, getting ourselves to be able to see. So we're talking about vichara, sustaining the attention. So it's the same principles apply, of course, as connecting the attention. We need to have them in the beginning, of course, which includes loving ourselves and caring about freedom and well-being and trusting that doing it is worthwhile, that kind of enthusiasm and trust in it, faith in this whole practice. Without much faith in it, you won't do it, and it's work, and you can see it's work. But this is not just work. There's more to it than working. And so that's the part that I want to add in this afternoon. Because if it were just plain work, it would be so dreary, we'd get fed up with it and we wouldn't keep doing it. I mean, you can only do so much work. And you need to do a certain amount. We need to definitely apply our energy, direct our attention, deliberately choose a focus, deliberately show up. But there's this other level which has to be incorporated in it, which gets to be the kind of the fun level in a way, and the more surrendered, it's sort of like the doing plus the being, or the male plus the female principle in a way. So there's the applying ourselves, as we've done and I've talked about, but then there's the staying, and to be able to stay with your chosen, you know, field or arena of whatever the object is that you're choosing to be with, your breathing or your body, whatever it is. There has to be this whole other piece of being able to stay here. This is the quality of relaxing. It's very tricky. I remember when, and you will remember that you've heard me say, I remember when many times, some of you. Those of you who know me for a long time, I've been saying this for a long, long time. I remember when I had a conversation with a colleague, now a friend, but previously a mentor and teacher called Guy Armstrong. We were talking about concentrating, and he said, well, the whole key to concentrating is relaxing. And I started off my Vipassana practice, started off my life with a type A personality, one thing, competitive and energetic type of person. And then my first 10-day retreats were Goenka-style retreats, where Goenka also, those of you who sat with him know, says, work, work, with his deep, booming voice, work. And so for somebody like me, with, you know, also Western world where striving seems to be rewarded, I jolly well worked. And so when Guy said to me, well, the whole thing about concentration is relaxation, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Because I didn't know about that part at all, and I didn't have that skill at all. I could do the concentrating, I could do the grit your teeth and nail your mind down and don't let it leave, you know, the nose for a fraction of a second and all of that approach. I really got good at that. Nailed it is such a great expression for it, because in me it was like, nail your attention to the end of your nostrils and never, never let it leave, kind of thing, really. And, you know, there's a level to skill in that, for sure, but there's way more to it. And this whole other thing of trusting that it will stay there, I didn't trust anything other than my own level of effort. I tried really hard, and I at least knew that that was, however much I applied myself, that was reliable. But if I didn't, then who knows what, you know, hell would break loose, kind of thing. Chaos would definitely ensue. And so to be able to trust that my mind was malleable enough, willing enough, soft enough, reliable enough to not go crazy as soon as I let go of this heavy director thing was a whole other level of understanding. And so to begin to back off the trying and just hang out, for instance, to relax, staying in the present moment, was it possible? I couldn't believe it. So that was then a lot of unlearning. Probably took an extra 15 years of practice to unlearn that first 15 years. But it's not about unlearning it, but it's about acting that we learn as well, that application and that, you know, intentionality and the focusing, the directing part, the doing, to also learn, which is why I'm putting it in right away on the second day of it. I always assume that we're starting at the beginning because you always are starting again. To be able to develop the skill of sinking the attention into. It's slow and it's patient and it's tender and it's receiving. It's one of the words I use for this is intimacy. And when we become intimate with somebody, someone, something, it's a slow process. You don't like busily collect data. You know? The image that always comes into my mind that, again, a lot of you hear me say over and over, because I was a midwife for 20 years, it's the way a new mother gets to know her infant. And she gets really intimate with the infant, and she gets to know every little hair on the head and all the little wrinkles around the eyes, all the little details around the fingernails. But she gives her attention to this little baby, and she just hangs out with it. I have a daughter who has an 18-month-old. I watched her do it. I mean, I've watched myself do it. It's delightful and fascinating, but it's the staying. When you stay with your attention, you give your attention, but you keep giving it. You don't do anything else. You just, time goes by, more and more and more is revealed. And it becomes delightful because you're not doing anything other than staying here with whatever this thing is. Of course, when it's a new baby and you're a new mother, then it's the most, it's all you want to do. You're so in love with it, you don't want anyone to say anything to you, you don't want to have to eat a meal, you just want to stay here. When you love something, that's what we do when we're with lovers. You just gaze, you just give your attention fully. It's just delightful. But so much information is absorbed into us, we're so sensitive, that we learn, doesn't feel like information we're gathering, it doesn't feel like a job of work, we're not trying to get it together. It's just that we sort of in whatever is there because of our being able to stay present. So it's a passive, open receptivity that happens if we stay open and present and stable. So it's the skill of stabilizing that being in the moment, being here with your, whatever it is you've chosen to anchor yourself to, and then sort of waiting. And whatever is also there will reveal itself, and who knows when and what it is. And I gave you some examples this morning of when you're with your breath. There's all those things and more that are available for you to discover around your breath. But you're not actively looking for it or digging or trying to collect, you know, data in a manual. You're just waiting and being there fully, availably. And then all kinds of things begin to reveal to you. And as you get things revealing themselves to you, you're sort of the passive observer. It's fascinating. I'm just like, wow, I never realized this. And there's a kind of like intrigue and delight that happens. We begin to really like receiving information in this kind of open, passive way. So it's not working, it's not doing, it's not striving, but it's maintaining availability, it's maintaining stability, staying in the audience and staying there, whatever. And sometimes it's boring, and sometimes it's beautiful, sometimes it's horrible, but staying anyway. And this is not the old program. This is not the survival program. The survival program is get busy, your executive assistant gets busy. I don't know if I said it again this morning, but I said it last night. I knew a woman once, she was a physician around the midwifery era, who was called Elizabeth. And it was shortened to busy. And then busy, and often we shortened that to biz. And so I've kind of named my executive assistant busy, because it is. And so we're not getting busy here. This skill of meditation isn't busy at all. The other, the applying yourself, okay, I'm going to be with this, and what's going on in my hands, and asking questions, is kind of busy. And that's our normal mode, our normal meaning, our typical survival, day-to-day way of going about it. But we're learning another whole level. And this other level isn't like that. It's not busy. It's resting, available, open, not spacing out, not relaxing and resting so that you're spaced out and you've gone off being neurotic somewhere else, but staying fully here, and that's enough. Maintaining a present awareness and then receiving who knows what will come. Our normal little mind will go towards the pleasant and start scheming how to get more of it, and where is it? I want it, and we'll start creating activity around it. With neutral and boring-y things, it tends to not even stay engaged at all, because why bother? And with unpleasant things, it gets very engaged. That's when Biz gets really on her, you know, mission, trying to fix it. You know, trying to explain it away, or avoid it, or blame somebody for it, or if only this had happened differently, or, you know, figure it out in some way. It gets really activated around the unpleasant, the difficult stuff. Well, we're relinquishing Biz. And so not to do any of those things, scheming, planning, trying to get something, or trying to avoid or get rid of or figure out or dissolve the difficulty. Just shush. And just stay. And just feel, like I was saying to you this morning, Johanna, just feel it, whatever it is. And when it's difficult, just let yourself stay here. Remember, of course, we're wired to be jumpy and nervy, and those, of course, who've survived, the human race who've survived, succeeded because of their being sufficiently jumpy and nervy, and the particularly laid-back ones got eaten by the dinosaurs or something, and things happen. And so that we've learned, we've accumulated this, you know, inherent reptilian jumpy nerviness, so we're going against all of this. We're going against the successful people who strived and got things, and those ones who figured out problems and solved them, and so it's counter all of that. That's why it's so hard to do. It's very simple. It's very little practical, but it's against all of that. And so we're unlearning. We're not doing. We're not taking up that little busy executive assistance activity. And we're just staying here. And so a lot of it is takes tolerance, particularly for the difficult. And tolerance is the is Kanti, Khanti. There's lots of H's in there too, after many of those double consonants. Mm-hmm. You don't pronounce any of that, but it's Khanti, as it were, but with an H. And that's usually translated as patience. Well, patience doesn't work so well for me. because I was also, as well as being a busy little one, you know, and a striver, I was utterly impatient. I remember very young, stamping my feet, you know, and pounding my fists and things like that. It was a very three-year-old reaction of mine, because I didn't want to wait. You know, I didn't want to have to compromise things. I remember very well, and I'm now, it's hard when you tell a story many times if you're remembering what happened or you're remembering the story that you've repeated, but anyway, I've repeated it enough that it's, I was maybe 7 or 8, and I was trying to understand, I always wanted to understand the meanings of things, I think, and I asked my mother to explain clearly the meaning of compromise, and I got it, and she told me, oh yes, I remember, like, that's terrible, it's a compromise, you can't have it all right now, I was furious, I remember it. So like patience is not my second name. So the idea of patience was another one of those teachings, those words. I was like, oh God. But as I explore it more, I get to understand it more. It doesn't mean waiting for the horrible stuff to go away and gritting your teeth in the meantime, kind of patience. Waiting for something better. It doesn't mean that at all. It means having the capacity to be okay while you're with something you don't like. It means being with in an okay way. It means more tolerance. It means more the capacity of being, growing this strong, steady spaciousness, even when things are unpleasant, so that we stay grounded and calm and okay. So it's growing that, like tolerating, but even not quite. There isn't a good English word. English language does not do a very good direct translation from the Pali. The Pali is very full of innuendo and subtlety and about inner experience, and the English language is all about doing and achieving and getting things and ruling the waves and that kind of thing. So this quality of staying present and allowing what's here to be known and not added to. We don't have to add an explanation, we don't have to add a judgment. We don't have to add any kind of agenda. We don't have to add even just a comment. Just is this. Just this. So we want to be able to recognize what's here, whatever it may be. And for some people, it really helps to put a name to it and note. Some teachers teach noting practices, so you make a mental note, which helps clarify what's happening. That doesn't work. It works really well for some people. But then we need to just let it be here. This is what is happening, whatever it is, itching happening, boredom happening, tiredness happening. First thing is to say the thing in a general term, not I am bored, but boredom. You know, I am squirmy here, but squirminess is here. The thing is here, not, it's not about me, it just is energy that's here. Period. And this skill that we have to develop is to be able to put a period in after we recognize something. Put the period in. That's it. That's all that's required. It's just, and then I better something, something, or oh, what will happen if this continues and then da 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 da. It's not doing all of that. It's the not adding all of that mental proliferation around it. Papancha in. Relinquishing papancha is what relinquishing is, what it means. And we can't stay in the midst of all this churning, because we don't want to. It's exhausting. But if we just stay quiet, it's easy. Itching. Period. So itching. As we develop this capacity, which fortunately for us it works, we can. If you know, the mind does get stable and stable and can stay longer and longer, as we stay, we start seeing very amazing things, which are actually so not just helpful, they're liberating. And I'm going to go into that whole thing tomorrow. But we see that an inch, for instance, isn't forever. The little mind who can't stay, who doesn't know how to just tolerate and make space for and be with without doing something to it, as it learns to be with, that little mind jumps onto some other thing that's stimulated, and it can recognize that, and then it jumps onto the next. I talked about when I was answering you, we were bogged up all the time. A sound, a thought, a memory, a physical sensation, you know, somebody looks at us in an odd way. We're just like boom, boom, boom all the time. And our minds, these little biz assistants, are able to jump to the next, to the next, to the next, to catch these bombarding things, really a lot of them, really rapidly. And those young ones, as I said last night, who live in this modern era, are bombarded like really fast nowadays. I mean, you can't see one web page without having 15 of them all jumping at you on the outside of the page. Able to recognize rapidly lots of different things. What we do not develop, or haven't developed, even us from the older generation when things were slower when we were younger, this ability to stay without having to react, without making up a story. It's counter to that survival mode. So we need to train in it. We don't believe, because we've survived with this jumpy, nervy thing, we actually are afraid of being uncomfortable. We are threatened by it, and that triggers our fear. And our fear is stupefying. You've heard me say that before. When fear is operational, it takes away all intelligent thinking, and it just is a sort of emotional reaction. And its deep message is, oh no, you're going to die, kind of thing. Like, this is not okay. No, 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 no way, no way, no way. That's what fear does to us. It's the opposite of, oh, this is interesting. It's the opposite. And that fear, reactivity deep inside, really spurs biz to get going, like big time. So to counteract the fear of being uncomfortable, because it might mean danger, it might mean death eventually, some problem, to counteract that just anyway stay, is against the stream, you know, really against that basic stream, so that's why we have to practice doing it. But what happens is when we stay with something unpleasant, even a little bit unpleasant, resisting biz and that whole activity of anything else, figuring out anything else, we just resist that, we just stay anyway. Lo and behold, we discover it's not that scary. That was just an idea that we have that it wasn't going to be okay and we had to do something about it. We don't have to do anything about it. Very, very, very little is that scary. Even the worst heartbreak, you know, even the worst anxiety, you've been given a terrible diagnosis. It's scary, all right, but it's not that scary. It's doable. And then all kinds of other things are there when we're able to stay with what we thought we couldn't tolerate. We discover empathy, or we discover sweetness of truth, or we discover all kinds of things. I'm going to put in what you might discover, but it becomes rich and meaningful and fascinating and changeable and all kinds of other things that we'd otherwise miss because we just don't want to go. Just do everything we can to not stay in face particularly difficult or uncomfortable. So all this is said to assure you to learn to be able to stay, even when the system isn't wanting to stay. And so connecting to your chosen field, your meditation object, whatever that may have been, with interest and so on, as we've done this morning, and now stay there longer than you think you want to, stay, you'll start seeing just how busy the mind is going, oh, no, 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 that's enough. I think of something else now. I think I'll... Imagine that she's already rung the bell and we're now walking along that path. I like that path where those blossoms were coming out over there. We go to the other. We go elsewhere. Mm-hmm. We think elsewhere is better than here. We deeply believe elsewhere is better than here. The future will be better. Or if I could just be back there again in the past when it was so nice and live that, it'll be better than being in this boring meditation hall. Mm-hmm. We have this belief that this little biz mind can find something better than this thing. This thing's not quite enough. This moment, this breath, just sitting here doing nothing much and hanging out with my breath is so boring. Mm-hmm. I can do something else. I'll pretend to be sitting here. Meanwhile, I'm off in Paris in my mind. We just believe that something else is better than this, but there is only this. There isn't anything else. It's all fabricated. It isn't better in fabrication land. The only place where real love happens, real joy happens, real understanding happens, real freedom happens is here. There isn't anything else. So we're just missing our life by being elsewhere. And we're doing it all the time. It's nuts. It's sad. And it doesn't even help. It makes us neurotic and it makes us exhausted. And it gets us frustrated. It's backwards. We're really ridiculous things. Well, the minds are, anyway. So, what else do I want to say about being here? I didn't say this morning, but I should have and will now. That because the way our minds are made, the way they're wired in there, I did talk about image because somebody asked a question about that over there. But a lot of people start, because they're so busy talking, just making comments. If you use that mind to say what's happening, it'll be a little, maybe a little otherwise engaged from making another comment. Oh no, you can say, itching, that kind of thing. To say that over and over what's happening is useful. Use the same word. And so one of the things that you could say regarding to the staying, I just wrote this in quotes because I say this sometimes, is enough already. Like enough of this othering. It's like, this is enough. Can I just be here? So sometimes what I'll say is, come here. I'll have this little word to help direct me. I gave you those areas to direct you, but I didn't give you these words. You could just say, you could say in, out, with the breath. I tend to say all the way in, all the way out, because it takes longer than, a breath takes longer than the word out in my mind. So if I go all the way out, slightly to stay with the breath. Or counting people do, is another thing. I like to say just this. Just as I breathe in, this, just this moment, just this body, just this being here in Bellingham, just here, or come here, and then stay here. And sometimes I'll just go stay, just like you're training a puppy. Your mind is a little, it's not just a puppy, it's about 10 puppies, right? They're running in every direction, so come here. Stay here, stay. It's okay. And sometimes I'll just go, it's okay. Okay. Because a lot of the reason that we wanted other, I use it as a verb to other, is anxiety. You know, our deep jumpy nerviness. It's not quite, maybe it's something a little bit better. It's like, oh, this isn't okay. But we need reassurance. It's okay. Just stay here. Shh. Or calm down. Calm down, or relax. It's very little you can see. It's not very sophisticated. It's not very complicated. The other is way more complicated than we tend to do. It's way, way busier, and way more exhausting, and way less helpful, unfortunately, in spite of itself, even though it's trying so hard. Sweet little biz. Calm down. So I'm going to just remind you again of the mnemonic slow rain. It's not just good words, it's slow. This is a slow calming. The mind becomes slower. It doesn't become duller because it gets slower. Speedy, jumpy minds aren't actually. When we can have a quiet, stable awareness, you know, this and that, more is revealed. Much more understanding can happen. We get much wiser with a steady mind. That jumpy mind isn't... We don't need to practice it. We're brilliant at that. It's this other one we don't have enough of. So slow, just as the meaning of the word slow, it's great. Stay, or settle, or sink your attention into whatever you're going to choose to do to make it stay longer. Lovingly, always you have to do this gently and kindly. Always remember that quality of it. Not just being good and getting something, but open. Today, I'm adding now for this afternoon the word open. We're open to whatever it is. We're going to have space for this, whatever it may be. What's going on in your knee, and what's going on in your heart? What's going on in your life? Like, oh. Oh is for oh. Oh, I see. W is for, it's also sometimes for wow. That's what's going on. But it's that kind of, I love the word wonder. And I think again of young kids, 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, when they're still fairly innocent, they're not clever yet, and they're like, wow, they're so excited about stuff. They're just like, this is fascinating. They're innocent with it. You know, they don't they haven't yet got to thinking, oh, that's not cool. You know, everything's fascinating when you're that young and you're innocent. But there's that delighted kind of like, wow. And then, you know, say, why is this? And what's that? That interest from just innocent interest, not trying to be clever or get information or prove anything. No ego there, just that innocent wonder. Love the word. Wonder. And then rain, R, recognize what it is that's happening. Itching or sadness. Anxiety, actually. Worrying. Yeah, whatever it may be. Longing. Lonely. Being able to just recognize it, and it really can be helpful to put a name to it like that. Impersonal name, of course. A is the same as O, is the accept makes space for. I is the same as W, wonder, be interested in. And N is it's not personal, this is just universal energy that we all experience. Just reminding you of those. So the O and the A, particularly open to and allowing whatever it is to be, is what has to get developed for us to be able to stay with it, try to rearrange. Stop adding things, stop adding stories and comments. Be quiet. Cut the bargaining, as I always say to myself. It's another one, I say, cut the bargaining. It's like, if I stay for three more breaths, then I can move. It's like always bargaining, trying to up against something. Just stop it, just stay here. Shush, you know, enough already. Okay, this is all less, it's much less than we think. We're trying to do this well. It's not so, it's a much less, a practice of less. That's why the whole thing about nekhama, relinquishing all that extra, trying so hard, being good, getting something, getting there, getting approval, being good, doing it right, looking cool. Just forget all that and just stay. Stay innocent, simple. So, a little extra thing I'm going to put in here. And I got this off the BBC. I get my news, my world news I get from BBC, you know, funny, I just still so English. Mm-hmm. I only left 47 years ago. but it's like, it's sort of like Jill Bolte Taylor reference. What we are doing, really, is we're turning off, or at least we're not turning off, you can't turn it off, but we're withdrawing attention from the left hemisphere and all of its thinking and explaining. And we're resting in the right hemisphere of being, of feeling, of sensing, of knowing directly and not figuring out and explaining. Right. So it's really a shift from hemispherical activity in the brain, interestingly enough. Well, here you go, interesting, I'm going to read you a few quotes. Aristotle assumed that the brain's main function was to chill the passions erupting from the heart, which he considered the heat of the soul. That's interesting. Chill. I don't know, we need to chill them, however. Mm-hmm. But the difference between head and heart, which really is left brain and right brain in what another way of thinking of it, embalmers, this is just snippets of information, so we're not alone in this understanding. Embalmers in ancient Egypt made sure to leave the heart of the chest, but they happily removed the mere cranial stuffing from the head. Interesting. And I'm quoting all different kinds of things and mixing stuff up. And there's some studies by, you know, I don't even know what psychotherapists about, you know, understanding how we function. Some of this I'll quote. It is our awareness of the racing heartbeat and the sweaty palms that transforms an abstract concept into a visceral emotion. We actually live the emotions that we feel in the body. They're living. They're not just a theory. Those people who can only theorize and aren't able to feel those things don't have the same passion accessible. The body rules the emotional cognition. At the moment, therapy is very much in the head. We change what the client thinks and we trust that their emotions will follow along. But often hit a wall, says this particular therapist. They say, the clients say that they know these things intellectually, but emotionally they can't feel. When you're walking around the park, your body might give you all sorts of pleasant feedback that shows you're relaxed and peaceful, but a depressed client seems to walk around the park without being engaged in the sensory experience and then comes back saying it was flat and empty. When we're not embodied, when we're in the head, We're not actually in the body to receive the sensory input, the sensory information of whether it's a racing or clammy palm or a smell from a blossom. The head has become too dominant for us. People with major depressive disorder, but without other complications like anxiety, struggle to feel their own heartbeat. And this is coming out of lots of research, by the way. The reason that it's, you know, keeps being, it's not that this is new information, but there's substantiating research for all these theories more and more these days. People with major depressive disorder struggle to feel their own heartbeat. And the poorer their awareness, the less likely they are to report positive experience in their daily lives. So this particular person making this report suggested that poor body perception also seems to be linked to measures of indecision, a problem that blights many people with depression. Isn't that interesting connection? They're discovering it. And it's all about not actually being able to feel. So why some people may have reduced bodily awareness, but it can be trained with practice. So this particular researcher is currently looking into the use of mindfulness-based therapy. I shouldn't laugh. Which encourages people to focus on the sensations in their bodies. The challenge is to try to recognize the feelings, even if they're unpleasant, without reacting to them in a knee-jerk way. We should then be better equipped to use the body as the emotional barometer to inform us about our states of mind and decide then how to act. Brilliant, eh? Mm-hmm. We could have taught him that, couldn't we? Mm-hmm. So what are you waiting for? Can you enjoy a richer, more emotional life? Tune into the sensory pleasures of the world and make better decisions? All we have to do is listen to your heart. Anyway, these are just a few snippets that I recently read at BBC World and thought, okay. The rest of the world is catching up with us. We're going to now practice continuing as you were doing this morning, but emphasizing, not adding, not commenting, not going anywhere else, not othering, so that you can stay with whatever you are experiencing. And it will change and other things will come because we're constantly bombarded. The point isn't about what's happening to you, it's about how you can stay with it. Instead of suddenly jumping on it with your agenda and then getting into all kinds of scheming and busyness in there. Okay, so letting go of busyness, letting go of othering, letting go of adding. Keep very simple, very quiet. Okay? All on the same page. We're going to do this now. And you can choose your areas to be aware of. You can use those ones which I suggested, or others if you have another area. Some people will be repeating meta phrases, for instance, or some other things. Some people may have a mantra. The Buddha didn't teach mantras, if you're interested in what the Buddha did. But whatever your focus to help gather you, or it can be a less contrived focus. Depending on your level of experience here in this room, there's a whole lot of different people, and I don't mean some of you are able to be present without having to be so focused on a particular object. You may not be on the afternoon of the first day of the week, I have no idea. Nothing wrong to have an object, but some people are able to be present with a more fluid attention. It could be moving from your breath and then an itch and then a sound outside and a certain state of mind and then a thought can come by and you can stay present. If you can stay present, fine, just stay present. But if you are better off to stay with one particular area, your hands, exploring all the sensations there, use that. You have to use your own skill. But the point is to be present. It doesn't matter whether you're being more open with your awareness, whether you're staying with one particular area. It doesn't matter about that. There's no right or wrong, good or bad. What we're wanting is to be present and to stay present in a sinking, settling, an increasingly relaxing way. So I'll be quiet now. We'll do this for about the next 20 minutes, 25 minutes. Okay? And if you feel dull because it's post-prandial time after lunch, then please stand up.